I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 476. We insist that length is not a factor.
In games.
In games!
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
It's been a little bit.
A lot of bits. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, it's been a bit since you and I have been together to record a podcast. Like, the last one we did was our Oscars one.
I know.
And then I was away.
Long.
In Microsoft land, doing super secret squirrel things.
Oh, man, you're so lucky.
I am. I can't tell you what I did, but it was awesome. Well, I can tell you some of the stuff I did. And some of the stuff that I did was freaking sweet. Getting to hang out with the Xbox MVPs, because just in case you've not heard me mention it, I don't do it all the time, but I am an Xbox MVP. I've been an MVP now for 2 years for Microsoft, and I get to go out to some events for them and with them, and I get to experience all kinds of cool things that I can't talk about until they become public, because I'm under NDA. But there are some things that I can talk about that are not under NDA, like all the fun activities that we get to do together as an MVP group that are not under NDA. So I got to hang out with the largest group of MVPs, Xbox MVPs that had gathered since I'd become an MVP, which was really awesome. We went bowling, we saw Daredevil together, and there's nothing like seeing Daredevil with 20 of your closest nerdy friends, of which only one other one has seen the Daredevil, at a movie theater where you can get booze and food delivered to your seat with a blanket and a pillow. Like, it's pretty bomb. It's pretty bomb. It was bomb time. So thank you so much to Microsoft for allowing me to be an MVP and having me out. And while I can't talk about the super secret squirrel stuff, I can talk about all the stuff that is out in the public. And one thing that I do want to talk about really kind of quickly, but you know us, it's going to be drawn out, is all the hubbub over Quantum Break coming to Windows 10, as well as the Xbox. A chunk of the community went off on social about the game not being exclusive to Xbox One, which is how it was described when it was announced, when the Xbox One was first announced. So remember way, way back when the Xbox One came out at the E3, and they were like, it's a media hub. And everybody was like, games? And they were like, we got a game we want to tell you about. It's called Quantum Break. And the game was a little bit different. It actually had a different protagonist at the time that it was announced. And, you know, some things happened that were not really great for the Xbox. Like, everybody went, why the fuck do I always have to be connected to the internet to do anything, really?
Yeah, who doesn't? And we all have issues about that.
Yeah, yeah, always on, people have issues with. And it's because, well, the problem with requiring always on is, if your shit's down, I'm not always on. Ba-da-bunk-sh. Which some people have run into, you know, when live is down. Like, a major complaint that I have, and it needs to be fixed, is when Xbox Live is down, you really can't do anything on your Xbox One, including play a Blu-ray disc, because the Blu-ray player is tied to Live. So if Live is down, you can't play a Blu-ray. You can't play any of your disc-based games that have call-outs to the net to get to cloud save or check to make sure that you're actually authorized to play the game. So in essence, your Xbox is bricked if Live is down. That's a problem.
Right.
Right?
Sounds like one to me.
You know, like your ability to play games on your gaming console not working simply because Live is down. Not your internet connection, The Xbox servers are down. The fact that you can't even do solo play, that's a problem. So it needs to be addressed. And, you know, the fact that you can't even, like, play a Blu-ray disc, something that has absolutely, really, truly nothing to do with the internet, but because it is tied to live, if live is down, you know can has movie. Hmm. That's a problem.
That's a very big problem.
You know, so there are things that still need to be addressed, and I'm hopeful that, you know, that one especially will be addressed, because that's a big problem. Like, I can understand not being able to do multiplayer if live is down, and I can even understand, like, not being able to get to my streaming services, although I believe that you can actually get to Netflix and Hulu if live is down. I could understand not being able to get to my streaming services, like, if they were tied through single sign-on to live. I could get behind that, but, like, the Blu-ray player and solo play for disc-based games, like, that's a problem. That's a big problem. I should be able to do that. So, you know, hopefully they will fix that, especially because it seems like Microsoft's been getting attacked a lot for the last month or so. There's pretty much a live outage every weekend. That's a problem.
That's a huge problem.
Gotta fix that. But there were a lot of people that, you know, expressed a whole lot of disgust over the fact that, you know, Quantum Break is getting ready to drop. The game looks amazing. But then they found out that it was not really, again, exclusive to Xbox, because Microsoft announced that when the game launches here, it is also going to be on Windows 10. And there were some people who were pissed off about it. So people got their panties in a twist. And I think it comes from a couple places. When the Xbox was announced, Microsoft, admittedly, they admit this themselves, they kind of fucked the pooch a bit in making everything all about media and TV, and remember all the unique content they were going to create, and they were making their own studio to do it, and they forgot about, hey, this is a game console, what about the games and the gamers? And right. So gamers felt really kind of like, hey, you guys were an afterthought to you. You just proved in your briefing that we are an afterthought. And the only thing that you've given us, really, that is unique for us, for our platform, is Quantum. And so there were a lot of people who were like, look, you guys are fucking me here, but I'm going to trust you that you're gonna make this right, and Quantum looks great, so I'm going to stay on this platform, and I'm going to go to Quantum. And I'm going to go to this platform knowing full well that I can't play a single one of my previous games, so I'm going to have to rebuild my whole library. You're forcing me, for the most part, into digital download. I'm not ready for it yet, but I'm going to give you one more try, because I really... really don't want you to fuck this up, and I love my 360 and the 360 world, so I'm gonna stick with you. As opposed to other people who are like, all right, Sony's system is $100 less, and I can play my old games. They're gonna have this whole thing where I'm gonna be able to play my whole library. Unbeknownst to us at the time, we were gonna have to pay through the nose for it, but
right.
They're gonna let me have my old library, and I don't have to play for multiplayer. You know what, Microsoft, fuck you, I'm out. So there were a chunk of people that left, there were a chunk of people that stayed, and for the longest time, and I was one of those people who carried the cry of like, look, Rise is a great game, great game, Forza's gorgeous, like, and
you mean Forza that you haven't played yet?
Right. It's a gorgeous game, and, you know Halo's coming around the corner. Guardians is going to be amazeballs. Like, stick with it. It's going to come back around. You know third party is going to be strong because they're going to be on everybody's platform. So just stick it out. And then we're going to have Quantum Break at the end of it. And so that, for the longest time, was the thing that a lot of Xbox users held their hat on when defending their platform. Because let's be frank, Xbox users, Xbox One users, have had to defend their platform against both the PlayStation 4 and even the Wii U for a big chunk of people, especially once Smash hit and, you know, now you've got Twilight Princess. There has been a lot of defense. And so to be like 3 weeks out from release, basically, and be told not by Microsoft beforehand, but hey, guys, guess what? We're going to have this for Windows 10 for 4K experience and for Xbox 2. Like, the defenders of the realm were like, what in the fuck? You lied to me.
And no one likes being lied to, guys.
And the reason why I think a lot of people felt lied to is because we all know how long it takes to dev a game. So This was not a last minute, ooh, we could just port it over to PC and port it. When you look at the requirements for the game and you look at the game coming out on PC and what you have to have in order to run it really well, okay, they've been working on this in tandem with the Xbox One. So they knew for a long time that they were going to not only release this game on Xbox, but also on Windows 10 for PC, and they waited until really the last possible moment when everything went gold to tell everyone. So the Defenders of the Realm were just like, oh, so you've completely given up on me, actually, because you're focusing on PC people, because this thing that you said was for me, just for me. It's actually for everyone. Now, I get that. I get the butt hurt. Do I think it's completely justified? Stop. No. Because you have to look at it this way. And I think a lot of people forget this from time to time. Your console is a gaming PC. It is a personal computer. It has a motherboard, graphics card, it has internal storage. It is a PC. PlayStation's a PC. Wii U is a PC. Xbox is a PC. At its core, the Xbox One is a Windows 10 device. That's why you should expect that moving forward, big titles, anything that Microsoft itself creates, you can be guaranteed that they're going to make it for Windows 10 too, because it allows them to sell it to more people to make more money, to put more money into developing these things. That's just good business.
And I think that's the big issue, is that us as gamers, those of us who are very committed to the hobby, the passion, the lifestyle, forget that we are consumers to, you know, Xbox and to Sony and to Nintendo. So at the bottom line, while we are a community and we have grown in such a way, at the end of the day, to them, we're all happy little wallets full of credit cards and money.
Well, here's the thing. It's not that we're just happy little wallets full of credit cards and money, but they have multiple communities, multiple batches of wallets with credit cards that they want to bring into their community and get playing. Like, if everybody who had a gaming PC had a console as well, that's just more money that the console maker can make. That's more money that third party can make. Okay, when you have people buying multiple things on multiple consoles, that's more money going into the economy. That's good for everyone. As long as games sell on all these platforms, developers can continue affordably to develop for those platforms. If you are Microsoft, who has both a PC community and a console community, you should want to feed and make profit off of both of those communities. It would kind of be dumb to be like, all right, well, you know, we sell Windows as an operating system, and you can game on Windows machines, and there are all kinds of companies out there making hardware to put our operating system on, and we have a gaming division for PC, but you know what? We're just going to fucking ignore that entirely and just focus on our console box that we don't make any money selling the console on, because we sell it dirt cheap in the hopes of selling software. And, we're just going to focus on that. Like, that would be stupid. That would be a stupid, stupid business move. At the same time, however, I do think that Microsoft completely botched the Quantum announcement. If they had announced at E3 last year, when they showed the new Quantum footage, that, hey, we have all kinds of new announcements about Quantum. We've got this great new footage. We've been able to up what we're going to be delivering for Quantum on the Xbox One, and it's going to be the best place that people, casual gamers, hardcore gamers, if they like, can pick up the experience for under $500. But guess what? We see the future, and we know that 4K PC gaming is where a lot of people in this room live when they're not on their console. So guess what? And then you show video of fucking Quantum on a PC, and everybody would have been like, ah, this is amazeballs! Windows everywhere! Quantum everywhere! But see, they didn't do that.
They didn't do that. Okay. You're absolutely right. That's not what they did.
Right, but if they had done it that way, there would be no hubbub. Everybody would be like, oh my god, like, I'm just getting ready to build my 4K rig, and now I'm going to be able to play fucking Quantum on it? Are you shitting me? They would be crazy excited. So it's all in how you frame it and how you do it. When you go, surprise, PC version, like 3 weeks before you release it, there's some people who are going to be pissed. People who pre-ordered it, who were like, oh, the only way I'm going to be able to play Quantum is if I get an Xbox One. So they got an Xbox One, even though they already had a PC, have been waiting for Quantum, and then 3 weeks before the game comes out, finds out, oh yeah, and it's going to be on PC too. So guess what? You probably didn't have to buy that Xbox. There would be some butt hurt.
There's some butt shade.
It was not thinking the thing all the way through. You know, and I think that, you know, when they made the switch to change the direction of the game and to change really what they wanted to do with the game, I think that there wasn't enough talk in the room of like, okay, so how are you going to communicate all of this change? Because outside of a couple of trailers at E3s, we have heard really nothing about Quantum until recently when it's been ready to come out. Like Microsoft has been sitting on it like it's a private little treasure, and they're now starting to leak it out because they have to actually sell it here in a few weeks.
Like, hey guys, look at this. Not yet. Not yet.
Right. And then they dropped this thing kind of nonchalantly, and the community went, whoa, hold the fuck up.
It's like, can we hit that pause button?
Just, like, real quick.
Like, you know, minute.
Yeah. So it was just, I think, it was just poor communication. I think if they communicated early on that, hey, this is our IP, we're developing it from Windows 10, it's going to be on Windows 10, the version that's in your Xbox, and Windows 10, the version that's on your PC, boom, everybody would have been like, ah, game domination, do it, Xbox, rah! But instead, they went all sneaky squirrel about it, and people rightfully had a reaction to it. So I think, like, this Quantum announcement is an example on how not to communicate changes in a game. You know, and if you do want to deliver something multi-platform in-house, just be upfront about it early on. When Sony comes out with God of War stuff, you know there's going to be, well, there was going to be a thing for the Vita.
Right.
At some point.
R.I.P. Vita.
Okay, like you knew that was going to happen. You were going to have, obviously, the console version. And there was probably going to be some kind of companion app thing for iOS and for Android. Like, you know that about Sony's internal stuff. That's how they go about creating their franchise ecospheres now. And more developers are doing that as well. Look at Assassins. Like, Assassins has, for their franchise, there are iOS apps and Android apps. There are feature-length films now, because we've got an Assassins movie that's going to drop. You've got the animated stuff. You've got the comics. Like, it is a full universe. It comes out on multiple platforms to keep the franchise alive. When you are launching a new IP, it is good business to put it in as many spaces as you possibly can to reach new people, because it's not like it has an existing fan base to go off of. And it's a huge investment, because it's not like they spared any expense on the talent in the thing. You gotta put it in multiple places. They just really communicated it really, really badly. Like, really bad. Like, badong. And the internet does not put up with badong.
Right.
So don't badong the internet. Because they no likey. So, I still am looking forward to Quantum. I've been looking forward to Quantum from when it was first announced and what the game was initially going to be. Everything that I've seen of the game up to now, from video that's up, which if you haven't checked out Quantum videos on YouTube, you really should. You look at it and, I don't know, it just kind of reminds me of, like, The Matrix, but in a good way, because of the way that you control time.
Right.
And, you know,
I think Neo manipulated more than time. He could just manipulate anything that he could.
Right, but the way that they do the time manipulation and how things break and into facets, like, I just like that. And it makes me feel very Matrix-y.
Okay.
You know, and when you watch the bullet plays and, like, when things happen in the slow time and the way they come through, it looks like the Matrix effect. And it's fucking cool. And I'm really looking forward to playing the game. I will be playing the game on my Xbox One. I will not be playing it on PC for a couple reasons. One, I'm not a massive PC gamer. And two, you gotta have a real powerful machine, though, to play Quantum. Like, you can't just be using, like, your $400 Dell. It's not gonna work.
No matter how souped up it might.
Nah, it's not gonna work. It's not gonna work. And, I mean, they've designed it to support a 4K experience, so if you got a rig that'll run 4K, it's probably a badass way to play the game. And even though I do have an adapter for my PC so that I can use my XB1 controller on my PC to play, it's just not powerful enough, and I'm not investing the kind of money it would take to play Quantum on the PC with that controller when I could just play it on my Xbox One. You know what I mean? So, I'm still looking forward to the game. Can't wait to play it. I'm looking forward to playing it. And when I do, you will definitely hear about it. You'll probably hear about it for multiple shows. Just because it's a huge experience. And it is, I think, ambitious. So, we'll see how it works out.
All right.
The last time I said a game looked really ambitious and I was really interested in playing it, and I got into it, it did not work out well. Watch Dogs. So.
All right.
So there's that I wanted to talk about. And then the other thing that's really been on my mind a lot, and I'm sure if you've been checking out any of the game news sites, you already know about this, but we're going to talk about this as well. There has been quite a shakeup, I would say, of South Hall, which is really kind of funny, for E3 this year. So, Panda, you were already aware that EA had pulled out of the expo.
They don't get nobody pregnant.
And they are holding their own Open to the Fans event the weekend before E3 officially starts.
Yeah.
So the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
I've been made aware of this news.
Okay. Then we heard about Activision pulling out.
Sorry.
Come on now.
I'm sorry, I'm not very mature.
I know, but try. Which made sense when you think about it, because Activision really doesn't have anything big new on the horizon right now that would be shipping in holiday. You know, Destiny is where it's at. There are no big expansions coming. So unlike having taken King to show off.
It's like, oh my god, guys, there's a new patch!
Well, you know how big Activision spaces. They're not doing anything big new, no new Skylanders, because they're in a pretty good groove there right now with that. You know, they're just released, you know, the Call of Duty game, so, like, they don't have anything new to show, and unless you have something new that's going to be shipping for holiday, at least, there really doesn't make a lot of sense money-wise to have the kind of space that Activision has to show off stuff that's already in the market. That everybody that's coming to the show has already talked about probably at least 3 or 4 times before the show, if you're talking about current things, right? So it makes sense that Activision's not going. But still, you're like, holy shit, like, that's a big chunk, you know, South Hall space. Who's going to take up all that space? And then? Disney and Wargaming announced that they are not going to have booth space at E3.
Wow. Okay. Surprise.
So, no EA.
No Activision.
No Activision. No Disney. No Wargaming at E3.
So then who's going?
That's a big fucking amount of space in South Hall.
Man.
That is not
being utilized? What are you going to...
Like, the entire back of South Hall has always been Wargaming and Activision.
Well, you know what? Now they can go and they can make, like, food stands so that you're not paying $6 for a hot dog that I could get for $2 at the convenience store.
You're just not going to let that hot dog thing go.
No! That was an expensive fucking hot dog.
It's been a couple of years since you've been to E3, and of all the things that you experienced in the E3s you've gone through, the one that stands out in your mind is the $6 hot dog.
Actually, no. The thing that really sticks in my mind is when we went to back when Nintendo did their early morning pressers. And that one time that they didn't give us coffee and bagels, and like we all, like everyone from that presser went to that one breakfast place in the Nokia Strip.
Yeah.
And after 55 minutes of waiting to get a table, you get waffles, KBD gets his waffle, and Hamster Man gets his waffle. Does Panda get her waffle? No, they ran out of waffle mix. And then I said, well, how about pancakes? And like, oh, yeah, we can do pancakes. And then 10 minutes after that, the girl, and I feel so bad for her because she clearly did not want to give me bad news.
No, she didn't.
And she was young, and I feel bad because, like, when I'm mad and I'm hungry, like, that hangry bitch face comes out. Like, I'm ready to, like, rip your throat out and cook you.
Yeah, you are.
And, like, she came 10 minutes later, and she's like, actually, the waffle mix is also our pancake mix. And I was like, so what can you do for me? And, like, she's like, let me get my manager, who then he came over, and he's like, we'll comp your whole meal. And I was like, all right, I want a burger, I want a shit ton of fries, I want two mimosas and a plate of bacon.
Yep. And they brought all of it.
All of it. And I drank the mimosas, I ate half my burger, I ate all the fries, and one plate of bacon.
Yep. Yeah, you did.
I did. Yep. And that's the moment that sits the freshest in my mind. Well, that and when I lost my shit when Usher was at the Xbox presser.
You did. You did lose your shit.
Those are the three things that I remember.
You took 112 photos of Usher. You took 200 photos total of that briefing.
If we put them all together.
And 112 of them were Usher.
Yeah. And
at the end.
And so, I mean, yeah. Well, that's just because, and you know, and I have to, when I think back to that particular moment in time, like...
You had a massive girl boner for Usher.
Like, I remember all in slow motion, like, my face, like, oh my God, the realization that he's gonna come out. I'm like, guys, like, I felt like the Mary Sue, like, I knew before everybody else knew. I was like, does no one get what's about to happen? And, like, I just got too excited. And it was like Old Faithful.
Well, and we were in the perfect spot because I got us down on the floor.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God. And before he even came out, I was like, he's coming out! Usher's coming! And then, sure enough, here he comes.
Yep.
And, like, I was, like, probably the most excited person. Like, everyone else is just like, yeah, and Usher then demoed, blah, blah. I'm like, why is no one dancing? It's, like, a free fucking concert. And it's Usher. What? Like... I was like, am I in a dream? Am I dreaming? And I wasn't. But that moment plus the two food moments were really the highlights and or not highlights of my E3 experience.
Right.
Well, I mean, I did meet Felicia Day.
You that did was, meet Felicia that was, Day. That should have been like that, up there.
Mouth words, no working.
Yeah, mouth words, no working.
But
happened. Yeah, so back to where I was talking about.
$6 for a hot dog, ridiculous, L.A., fucking ridiculous, but moving on.
All right. But anyway, moving on. All right. And it was a kosher dog, so there is at least that.
I'm not worth $6. I'm sorry. Sorry, not worth $6.
All right. Anyway, moving on. The big thing is, to me, is I think that this is kind of a signaling of two things. Because there are a lot of people who are like, oh my God, E3's over. No one's going. And I'm like, hold on. People are still going to E3. It's just that Disney's not going. Activision's not going. The people who are not taking up big booth space, like they traditionally take up big booth space, are not going. Because I think, in all honesty, they don't have anything big, new, that they're ready to reveal to the world. Which E3 is an industry event designed to get the industry hyped and talking about what is coming for holiday and a short run after holiday of that year. If you don't have anything that is coming for a holiday or a short run holiday after that, that is big.
Then there's really no point.
There's no reason in spending the space, the money on the space, the people, the time, the effort,
right,
to do the show. Okay. So unless you have at least a game to show off, you should not spend the hundreds of thousands of dollars ultimately that you end up spending for that week in LA, because that's people, that's up in hotel, that's travel, that's media, that's like, you know, like, it's not a cheap thing to do. So I can understand Disney being like, hey, we don't need to have a booth right now because we're at a good spot with what we're doing with Infinity, and guess what? anything that we're coming out with for holiday or things like that are just going to be expansions, you know, more characters, some new toy box things and things like that. There's no reason to have that booth space like they have been having, because 3.0 is pretty solid and they're probably not going to rock 4.0 for a while, because they're going to ride out all the Star Wars stuff, and there's a whole lot of people in the universe for Disney that they get to add in now.
Right.
You know, so there really doesn't make sense for Disney to have the big booth space, unlike last year when they had a big thing to announce, which was all three of the Star Wars kits right before the movie came out.
Right.
And the Inside Out set and the changes to Toy Box and the community stuff. Like, they had a lot of big stuff to talk about last year. They don't this year, so it makes no sense for them to have booth space. Same thing with Activision. Like, they're not coming out with a new Call of Duty game for holiday. There's nothing big new coming for Destiny. Like, the team has already said, like, their roadmap for the rest of this year is that they're gonna have another raid, and there's gonna be more emote packs and other additions to the space, like Sparrow Racing and things like that, but they're not doing another big expansion for a while. And so the next big thing that will happen for Destiny will be Destiny 2 boot, right? And that shit's not happening anytime in 2016, probably not even early 2017. So there's no reason for Activision to have a booth. Guitar Hero Live didn't do what they wanted it to do.
Don't get me wrong, of the two...
Live is good. Live is good. But it didn't do what they wanted it to do, so it's probably not going to...
garnish any more investment.
Well, it's not going to get a sequel. They will probably continue to put more things into the live space for people
to buy. There's so much stuff in it right now.
Right. And so that's probably the thing that they will maintain for the people that have bought into it, but they're probably not going to make a Live 2, right?
Right.
So, if you don't have any Call of Duty, you don't have any Destiny, you don't have any Skylanders, you don't have anything for Guitar Hero, why the fuck would you have a big-ass booth space?
You don't?
You don't. Okay, Wargaming. Guess what? World of Warplanes, World of Warships, World of Tanks does phenomenally fucking well. It's been doing phenomenally fucking well. Guess what? They're not adding any, you know... other war vehicles.
World of Warboats.
Look, they already have World of Warships. And they have warplanes, warships, and tanks. Like, what else?
Space.
World of War satellites? I don't really think anybody wants to play that game.
Yeah, there would probably be like three people who would play that game.
Right. So.
But anyway, so they're kind of good.
So they're good, and guess what? People who are going to E3 are not going to want to stand in line to play shit that they've already played.
Right.
And they've already written about. So unless you're doing a tournament, which industry people more than likely are not going to sign up for a Wargaming tournament.
League of Legends could totally take over the South Hall and just have nothing but tourneys all...
But they would have to invite people in because, again, E3 is not open to the public.
Oh, right.
Okay, it's industry only. You do not want an industry only League of Legends tournament.
Oh man, it would be so
nobody wants that.
Like, how do I hotkey these?
Okay, we would rule the Times team. We would rule them. It would not even be a tournament. Okay? So at this point, there's no reason for Wargaming to have a big fucking experience, which also means no Wargaming party.
Right, which is one of the biggest parties that happens. And the
best. So they're not having... Like, developers have already learned, and I think that most of the publishers are learning, that they can have as much success getting publicity and getting press to cover their stuff by having smaller events that they completely control, that the focus that entire day and all the pubs that are going to be coming out that day are about them, as opposed to trying to compete at E3 for press amongst each other, right? Like, think about how we've structured the way that we attack E3. We divvy up the press events that we can get into.
Yep.
We immediately rush to try and cover them, like every other person at the fucking show. We make appointments with everybody that we can to see stuff. We're seeing the exact same thing as everybody else is seeing at the show. We bust our ass to write about them, to do podcasts about them. And what ends up happening? Somebody makes an announcement. You're in the middle of writing that. Somebody else makes another announcement. It is hella buzzing. You switch gears and you focus on trying to get a piece out about that. It's so you constantly have everybody stealing each other's, or trying to steal everybody's thunder and one-up each other, because everybody's there. As opposed to if you get invited out to, oh, I don't know, a Microsoft showcase where you're seeing only things for Xbox, all of the press that are there are going to be writing about the Xbox stuff.
Right.
So you will have a flood of Xbox stuff hitting the market all at the same time. And so the only way you get upstaged is if somebody knows when your stuff is going to be going live to try and come up with something that they announce at the same time. So it makes more sense to have a smaller event that you can have exactly who you want, because you're inviting them out to cover your stuff. Or go the route of a PAX East, where it's open to the public, so you can get more bang for your buck, where you can have both people coming to look and cover your things, as well as sell the things that are available, both the pre-order things and the things that you have for sale now. Like look at how UB attacks PAX East, right? When they go, they have both stuff that is getting ready to come out, that they can do pre-order things, and they give you pre-order bonuses, tangible ones right then and there if you pre-order, typically a t-shirt or some shit like that. And they have their stuff that's available right now, so it allows them to use it as a sales mechanic. So it's now a, here's a way for us to drive more sales to people who maybe were not introduced to our game. We can allow them to play it, and if they have such a great experience in our booth, they can immediately turn around and buy it, as opposed to relying on emails from GameStop or reviews that they've read. We can now physically control the experience they have with it and then sell it to them right then and there. And we'll do some fun things in the booth, too, that they can have some takeaways for. So, again, they build loyalty. It is a sales channel for them because it is open to the public. And because of the press that is there that it goes, they can also do some hands-on things, behind-closed-door things for things to come. It is a great model to look at, and it is something that E3 does not allow. And for a couple of reasons, because E3 gets so big that when it is open to the public, the lines are ridiculous, press won't wait for them, so they say, fuck your game, you get negative press. Like, it's hard to feed both masters. So what do you do? Because this is a big chunk of South Hall that is right now up for grabs. As far as space goes, I don't know. Like, Natsumi could probably get a sweet fucking deal.
Yep.
On space right now. And I'm trying to think, like, typically who's in the hall. You know, Take-Two can have a massive booth now.
Yeah, but what does, I don't know if Take-Two's got anything huge on the,
Take-Two has said that they're going to be at E3.
Oh.
Yeah. Take-Two is at E3, which means that they can now have a massive fucking space, because EA's not there, Activision's not there, Disney's not there. Like, and these are, like, all of the big studs for South Hall, so I'm wondering, like, who the fuck is gonna be over there?
Well, I mean, I guess Twitch could have a bigger, like, setup.
But you've got main floor anyway. But, like, How much space does Twitch need now, because there's so many big guys not there to go and do booth stuff from? Like, Twitch's big thing for the last couple of years has been they've had a big booth because they've been sending people out to go to booths and stuff to do virtual E3 for people who can't go.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It thickens.
Right? So, like...
yeah.
Who's gonna be, like, big in the space? Like... Sony typically is in North Hall.
Right.
Or West Hall. I can't remember what the fuck that is.
Maybe they could make it a big... I mean, I know it's usually for the big wigs and stuff, but maybe it's going to be a really good place to...
Square usually has a decent space to begin with. But, you know, Square won't talk to you unless you're like Kotaku, so...
That's not true. They talked to me for a while.
No, you didn't get behind closed doors like we were told we were getting.
I got one really good behind closed doors with them.
Yeah,
one.
I have never. So, I thought I had a behind closed door for the game that was in Salem. And they're like, no, it's just a fast pass. Go right on in. I was like, I want hands on.
It's okay, Screenix. We know that you've been having problems.
Yeah, hopefully Hitman does something for them, because I really want them to have a win there. They need there. But hey, they haven't been having that many problems because Tomb Raider, though.
It helps.
So, you know, ultimately, here's the thing that I see for it for E3. And then I'm going to shut up.
Okay.
The show needs to be retooled. It is going to evolve. It always does. Shows always evolve. And ultimately, they run their course. Do I think that in North America, we are done with a big industry-only event yet? No. Do I think that it needs to be retooled? Yes. I think, you know, back in the day, E3 used to be industry-only for the first 2 days, and then they would open it up to the public for the last day. And I think if you structured it that way so that people that were having that booth space understood that the last day it was going to be open to the public. Because let's face it, most press is done by Thursday morning.
Yep.
Anybody that's running around Thursday day are catching up on appointments that they had to move from the other 2 days because other opportunities popped up. Your PR people, your subject matter experts are usually gone by Thursday. And so you just got the hired-on PR people to hand out swag and press kits.
So then why not make that last day for the public? So one, you're getting pure enthusiasm and just general
correct.
Appreciation.
Which all those people have smartphones, so they're going to be fucking on Periscope, doing Vines, like all kinds of stuff. But that also becomes your sales day. So you can take the things that are ready right now. You can set yourself up for pre-order that allows you to bring in just a bunch of people.
Oh my God,
with like
that
Square
would bring
systems.
In so much money.
Do you understand what I'm saying? So then it becomes a day where you can kind of recoup some of your investment. So right. You get your press days knocked out.
You hear that, Astro Gaming?
You get your press days knocked out. So you get all of your behind closed doors with who you want. You've already invited them, all that kind of stuff. You get your additional PR people, press people coming through on days one and two. You open up day three, okay, and you do priority, just hands-on behind closed door for press. Everything that's happening in your booth on the floor is all stuff that's open to the public so they can get hands-on with things. Because they'll wait for hours.
Oh, man.
They can get hands-on with things, but then you also have your merch stuff opened up so that, hey, while you're waiting, like, because let's face it, Square readers are really easy to use. You can have booth babes walking around selling T-shirts, pre-orders for your stuff, like, and you can recoup because you can now do some sales. So you basically make the last day of E3 like PAX East.
That's kind of how I feel what mostly happens on the last day of PAX East is. Like, it's usually a big push to, one, get, say, at least in terms of sales, to get as many people to your place to buy as much of your stuff. So, one, you don't have to pack it all up and go.
Truth.
Because, oh man, like, all of a sudden, all the sales, like, if a vendor's going to go and, like, try to get rid of merchandise, they're going to do it on the Sunday.
That's why I wait to do any of my purchases until midday Sunday.
Except for the scarf.
Except for
the
scarf. Scarf I do day one. But the rest of my merch, I wait until midday on Sunday because I know prices are going to drop. Because nobody wants to have to haul back home half of their shit. So that's if you're going to be looking for gunners, like, that's the day to go look at them. If you're looking for an Astro setup, that's the time of day to look for it.
That's the time of day.
You know, but I think it would be a smarter move to treat that last. And here's the thing that you have to commit to make that work is that every press appointment that you book, and you got to go minimal on booking them, needs to be behind closed doors. So that way your press people don't get pissed off having to wait behind public to try and get their scoop that they haven't been able to get to early in the week because, frankly, you were more focused on letting the IGNs and the Polygons and the Twitchers of the world in as opposed to your press. So your Thursday, any press appointment that you make is a behind-closed-doors, quiet environment appointment. It is not on the floor. It is hands-on. It is interview. And everything that's happening on the floor is just the stuff that's open to the public. So if somebody in the press wants to go and have a public time and they want to be a player, then they can get in line just like everybody else and wait like just like everybody else. But for those interview things, for those appointment things, like those are all closed door, and that's how you recoup. And then you get that big buzz from the community. You're golden. You're golden. So hopefully the IDG will realize this and they'll retool their event. And then that will give the Disneys of the world and the Activisions of the world and any other developer who does not have a big announcement to make in this sales corridor a justifiable reason to spend the money to be there. Because let me tell you, if the last day of E3 was open to the public, you can bet your sweet ass Disney and Activision would still be there, because Disney would sell the fuck out of Infinity bundles.
You're right. You're 100%. You're 110% right.
So, and Destiny would be selling like hotcakes if you could pick up all these expansions.
Something for you to consider, huh?
You know. So that's what I got.
Okay.
I had a lot to talk about.
It's what happens.
It's what happens when we don't do a show for a couple weeks.
I know.
You're shit to say.
I'm done now.
So, as I'm losing my voice, I'm going to hand the mic of a thousand truths over to you. What do you got? Because I know that you've been playing some games while I've been gone.
I have been. Well, here's the thing. I've been playing a lot of Amplitude, for one. Because I know.
Because I gave you the keys to the kingdom as far as switching the controller setup?
Actually, no. I went back to my other and I've
been
back. Everybody plays different. But I went back to it. And, like, there's a couple of small things I want to talk about this at first.
All right.
Like, as soon as it, like, came out for Backstarter, like, both you and me were like, take our money! And, like, granted,
I mean, Kickstarter? I don't know what Backstarter is, but...
I mean, yeah, well, back it.
Yeah, backer kit when you actually got it.
Yeah. Anyway, so Kick, we both were like, take our money! And we did that, which was wonderful. I'm like, I'm a little mad.
Why?
Okay, because, for one, like, I pledged $70, because back then, I wasn't making all that much money.
Right.
I had to save that, so that I could pay to have that nostalgia and stuff. And
Why are you mad, bro?
I'm not. But here's what I'm mad about.
See, so, like, but you just said you're mad. I'm like, why are you mad, bro? And you're like, I'm not, but I'm a little mad.
So I backed it. My name is in the backer list when the credits and stuff roll.
I haven't even checked the credits yet.
You're there. Okay. I saw you. I saw me, I saw you, and I saw my fiance.
Yeah.
Because we all backed it.
Yeah.
But when I go and I play in, like, not campaign, when I'm just playing quick play, I could see all the people who have bought it and have played it, and I could see their scores and stuff.
Yeah.
Your name has a K next to it. Mine doesn't.
Do you want to know why? Because I backed it at the higher level, you asshole.
Okay. That's what I thought. Because literally, I'm playing it, and, like, the fiance's with me, and I'm not doing very good. Because this is one song that really just... I could not do it for the life of me.
I backed it at a higher level, and I backed it earlier than you did, dipshit.
And I was like, he's like,
remember?
Okay.
I got into the VIP party because I backed it at the level.
Right. Whatever.
Yeah.
That night that you got to go in, and I was like, it's so cold, sis. It's so cold.
Yep.
Anyway.
And I was like, it's so warm in here, though. And it's so funny because Pope and Trites were like, are you seriously taunting your sister right now? I was like, look, I told her to back it at the higher level.
Did it, though. And
okay.
And you
knew it. And I was like, because it said early access to the party, not just the party. But she was like, nah, I can't live that life, bro. And I was like, I understand. Now, that's not my fault. That's not my bad. Okay. I got my bag. I got in early. I got my drinks, you know, I got my early appetizer on, and, you know, I had to check on you to make sure that you weren't a frozen popsicle.
Oh, well, if I had been, there wouldn't have been much to do about that, but anyway.
I would have warmed you up.
But that's the thing, so I'm just like,
Don't be pissed, that's just the backer level, bitch.
Man. Oh, like, we had a mildly heated... I'm like, I don't get it. I backed it. You backed it. Why did she get a K? I want a K. And then, so I was like, motherfucker with her K. But that's right. I'm going to beat her on this. And then I did that.
And then you did.
And then I did that.
Anyway.
So that was my little...
O-N-V.
That was my little tidbit about...
Well, again, don't be hating because I spent more money on it than you.
Right. I just did not
That's
have
basically it. All that is.
Moving right along.
I spent more money earlier. Ta-da!
Than me. But moving right along. So the game I want to talk about...
Yeah.
For one, I know Markiplier had started playing it, but I didn't watch him play it when I had started to play it.
Right.
And then I realized that he had been, and then I was kind of watching him and playing it in tandem, which is kind of what I do with most games. And
you play along with Markiplier?
Well, like, he'll play it, and, like, I'll see the first one, I'll be like, I kind of like that. And then I'll go and download it, and then I'll play
it. Yeah, that's happened to me with a couple of games. That's how I ended up owning Honey Pop, even though I don't want to admit that I own it, but I do.
It's okay. It's okay, bro. I thought about buying it, too. I'm like, choices.
But Game Grumps did make me play Undertale, and I'm very glad for that.
So, but then I'll play it for a bit, and then I stop, and then I watch what he's done. And I always make sure that whatever I'm watching him do, it's before what I've done, or beyond what I've done, or whatever. But anyway.
It's one of those things. It's either before or after where I'm at.
Usually I'm further along, and then I'm just seeing what he does. So that's right. It.
That's a good way to go about it.
Yeah, because I don't want him to spoil anything, and I don't want to spoil anything. But the game is Firewatch, and it came, I think Campo Santo developed it. I think Panic published it, and this is kind of their debut game, I believe. This game kind of came out of nowhere, and people were like, oh man, I get to watch fires? That's cool. And like with a name like Firewatch, that's kind of what you think you're going to do.
Right.
The game is exceptionally short, but then again, here at Esh, we have never diminished a game's quality over its playable time.
Nope.
So I just want to
preface. That is not a factor for us as far as whether or not a game is worth renting, buying, playing, or giving as a gift. Doesn't matter about the length of time.
So, you know, going into this game, you know, I had a very different idea of what I'd be doing. And what you end up doing is kind of completely not what you do.
Are you an arsonist? Are you setting the fires?
No, you're not setting the fires, but it's first person, so you never really get to see what you look like.
Right.
But literally what you are is you're this character, his name's Henry, and the whole beginning is pretty much kind of a preset, so you get an idea of who Henry is.
Right.
And you see him going to you don't see him, but like you literally read through his narrative of how he's going through school, college, and he's at a bar one night and he sees a girl and you're clicking all these interactions and you literally end up meeting the love of your life, your wife, I think her name's Julia? I'm trying to remember. Literally, like, you guys kind of are awkward together, you fall in love, eventually you decide you're going to get a dog, and then through that, you're like, well, maybe we should get married and have kids, and you decide to do that, but then all these stuff, like, it starts off really, really good. Like, life is really good for Henry, like, everything's falling into place. And then your wife, she starts developing early onset Alzheimer's. Like, advanced Alzheimer's.
No.
And, like, she's a professor, and, like, she gets accepted to teach at Yale, and it starts to affect her while she's at work.
No.
And, yeah. And it's sad, bro. Like, it's, and granted, we personally, you know, we have had Alzheimer's.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, I was like, oh, no. Like, I know what this is.
Ugh.
I'm like, oh, man. And, like, all the feels happen. And it gets to a point where she almost nearly, like, hurts herself, like, really bad. And your wife is from Australia, and her family practically decides to, and there's multiple ways this can play out. You can either let the family bring her back to Australia, because, you know, that's her family and stuff, or you can put her in, like, a home.
Uh-oh.
And, like I said, the story gets heavier and heavier as it goes, because if you send her off to her family, like, you are kind of, you know, you kind of start resenting the fact that you didn't try to take care of yourself, at least, like, put in that effort. I mean, she is your wife and you love her.
Right.
And through that despair of trying to figure out why he's done what he's done, he decides to take this job to be a fire lookout. And the other side, because like I told you, I've played this two ways. And the other way,
Spoiling anything? I just want to make sure.
Not yet. No,
Put out the pre-spoiler just in case you're about to spoil anything.
We should just have that stuck onto every show because we spoil something every show.
Esh, we spoil the shit out of everything. Should we just make that our tagline instead of ours is to game?
Yeah, probably. No, this is all the beginning stuff just to establish what brings Henry to this job.
Right.
But you get the option to put her in a home and... Like I said, the story really kind of pulls you in because you put her in there and you visit her every week, like every day, every week. Then it's every other day in the week. that, and you see him withdrawing from her because she's losing her memories of you to the point where eventually you are practically a stranger to her, and she doesn't remember
you at all
who you are.
Yeah,
and at that point, that's
fucking games.
Oh man, yeah, and so at that point, he sees an ad to be a fire lookout in Wyoming, and he takes it. Because this one, it's a very quiet job. You practically are living up in this giant tower for several months. It was around the fires that happened at the Yellowstone fires of, I think it was like in the 1980s. I want to say like 1988, I think. So I was 4. So I have no recollection of any of this.
Yeah, we didn't live in Wyoming, so I don't have any recollection of it.
No, but I do believe it was an actual event that happened in Yellowstone.
Okay.
But anyway. So when you get there, like, you're hiking through the woods and you get to your post and, like, you climb up these huge stairs and there's a walkie-talkie and all of a sudden this voice comes through the walkie-talkie and it's a lady. And I was like, uh-oh. I'm like, he really lonely and sad and she has a really nice voice. I'm like, I hope we're not going to fap to her, but we're probably going to do it because we're a lonely man in our 40s. We're still in our prime. You know, like, they're setting it up. They're setting up this duality of Henry, the virtuous husband who has had an unfortunate circumstance in his marriage life, and this hot, tempting newness, you know. So I was like, oh, no. I'm like, I'm going to be a whore, and I'm going to betray my wife. Granted, she doesn't know who I am, so I guess it's not really. So, like, all those thoughts are, like, floating around in my head as I'm playing it. But anyway, so the first few, because you're there for about, I want to say you're supposed to be there for about 90 days, but you end up only being there for 70, and I won't spoil as to why. But as you're roaming, because you could go practically anywhere on this map, which is great. It also isn't very linear, so like when you look at your map, it doesn't show you where you are on the map. You actually have to track properly and figure out how to navigate the woods, because
uh-huh.
The game does not hold your hand.
Oh, like, that's a problem for me right there.
But it's gorgeous. But anyway, throughout the encounter, while you're there, practically for most of the game, there are no fires. Which I was like,
wait,
I thought... Right,
if you're
exactly.
watching for fire, how come there's no fire?
Well, I mean,
are you just that good at preventing fire?
I mean, I guess as the job, like, you're watching for fire so you can report them, but I mean, like...
Or was the real fire all the stuff going on that led you to take this job?
Smart observation. Anyway, smart observation. I actually didn't think about that. But sometimes, you know, like when I was a lifeguard, like I lifeguarded for over 2 years, and I wasn't always saving people. Like sometimes people are smart and don't put themselves in dangerous situations, but I still got paid as if someone did. So, you know, I figured that's probably the same for fire watchers. But while you're doing this, like, you're learning about the landscape, you're listening to Delilah, because that's her name, you start bonding with her. Or rather, the option is you can bond with her. You can choose not to. You could be an asshole if you want to. But, I mean, I feel like the narrative kind of, you need that other participant in your narrative for it to really kind of hit you. But as you're navigating the woods, you find all these, like, lock boxes, and you find all these journal entries, and you find all these knickknacks. You find this backpack of this guy named Brian, who Delilah tells you was this kid who had been here a couple of summers ago with his dad, who was not the best dad in the world, because he kind of pulled this kid out of school, you know, to go watch fires and kind of be of the land and whatever. And then one day they just up and left, and, like, there was no word as to why or any of that. There's a mystery in that, and like I said, I'm not going to spoil that, because that's really kind of where the real, true narrative of this game
is. Yeah, I think the fire is not actually, like, physically fire.
Well, I mean, there is some fire.
Yeah, but I don't think that's actually the fire watch you are on. You
right,
know?
Exactly. But
this game deep as fuck.
It is. And the game can literally be played, I think our run of the whole game between 2 days was maybe 4 hours, maybe 5. So it's a short game, but there's so much going on. There's so many things that they really rely the player to kind of instinctively kind of figure out. Because like I said, they don't say, oh, here's your map. Press X to follow route to B. No, none of that. You have to triangulate all by yourself, which was not.
So were you sketching out your own maps?
Well, no. So you have a map, or rather you start off with a main map. And in each of the lock boxes that you find, there's like a combination to open them. It will have a piece of the map with like markings and stuff on ideally of where you have to go. But it doesn't, like, you can put it on your map, but it doesn't, you don't get, like, a yellow line that leads you to...
Right, you know, you don't get a waypoint set and then just follow the dotted line to the destination.
Exactly. It's like, oh, that's that place I should go to, but I don't know where I am on my map to know if I'm going the right way. So there's a lot of opportunities to get lost in the game, which I think they did this for the intended reason that they wanted you to explore it all. Because we're so trained as gamers... Because most games will set that waypoint or will give you that yellow line, that adventure line, and they'll really put you on autopilot, and that whole instinctive learning how to navigate is something that we just turn off instinctively when we play this game, because we expect that you're going to, you know, if you're not going to handhold us, you're going to drop us a crumb that's going to give us the hint that's going to make our synapses blow, like send off or whatever, but not in this game. They really want you to figure out your surroundings. And it's beautiful, and it's really simplistic. I mean, the animation style I thought was really fresh. I was not a very pro Delilah at the start of this game, because I was like, she gonna tempt me, I'm gonna see her and maybe see some titty, and then I'm gonna be like, I'm gonna betray my woman. But they, believe it or not, they do a really good job of establishing a character with only giving us a voice. It kind of reminded me of what I thought Her was gonna be about.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw Her.
No.
With Joaquin. Okay. Well, because, you know, I don't know if you know, but, you know, Joaquin Phoenix is pretty much a shut-in kind of guy, and he kind of falls in love with his computer, and his computer sounds like Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
So, I mean, clearly you can understand why anyone would fall in love with that voice.
Right. Because Scarlett Johansson, though.
Right, exactly. But, I mean, you get this disembodied voice who you're bonding with. And I mean, I think it also kind of speaks to interactions over mediums, too, because you never see Delilah, which, I mean, I guess that's kind of a spoiler, because you don't know that you're never going to see her. See? So, but during that whole point where you think you're going to, because like I said, I played it both ways. I played one where I didn't really care about knowing her and one where I really did. And it really kind of, if I had balls, it would have kicked me in them when I got to the point where here I thought during this really awesome part in the game that we were finally going to connect on in a physical space and see what happened with that, and you don't. And you're like, you're going to cheat me out of that game? But granted, life's not always fair, and sometimes life cheats. So it was like a really great, humbling experience. Now, you could get this. You can get this on Steam, which is what me and the fiancé played on. You can get it for the PS4, because I think they just fairly recently made that available for that. It's really... really kind of interesting. And what, talk about taking something that is not intrinsically interesting to the majority, because I know there are people who really love nature and love fires, maybe a little too much. So I mean, this might have already been up in your wheelhouse alley, but for the general population that I know personally, I've never heard any of them say, you know what I want to do for 3 months, I want to live in,
I just want to go to Wyoming and like prevent forest fires. I want to be like Smokey the fucking Bear and prevent forest fires. It's my life's dream.
Right.
I could be Ootsie the Owl, so I'm going to be Smokey the fucking Bear.
But I did not, I've never heard anyone say that. But this really kind of opens up the possibility of doing something that isn't necessarily something you would set yourself up to do, and then having something, I don't want to say wonderful, but something unexpected that could completely shift the dynamic of the particular job that you've set out to do. Yeah. Which I also think is kind of one of the underlying focal points that this game wanted to point out, that you shouldn't always trust the title of games, because that's not all you're going to get, clearly.
Truth.
And you have to look beyond that sometimes, beyond the front page or the front cover of things, to really find...
Beyond Two Souls, you gonna finish it?
Yeah.
Today?
No. but it's out there, and it's totally worth... And like I said, it's only about 5 hours of continuous gameplay, if you can commit that. So it's not a big 80-hour sucker game, but I feel like the resonance of the narrative and how you choose to play it clearly...
Makes it worth playing.
Makes it worth whatever money you're going to invest in it. Now, granted, if you're going to get this through Steam, obviously, I would say wait till a Steam sale because it would probably get chosen for a Steam sale. And then you can get it on the cheap.
Here's the thing. If you're getting it on Steam, just go ahead and get it. Don't even worry about the Steam sale. And the only reason why I say that is because Steam. Just give them your money. Just give them your money. It's over. So just accept it.
I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this experience. And, I mean, if this is the debut game from this developer and this publisher, well, then I want them to pretty much move in together and just make more games together.
Just make more game babies.
It flowed so naturally. And, I mean, I think we're so used to certain dev houses and publishers always working together. So you get the same kind of feel from a game,
with certain franchises and certain games, you to expect a certain rhythm and stories to be told somewhere. Like, Remedy tells a great game.
Right.
Tells a great story in a game. Like, they fucking know how to story tell. Okay, I think the same is, like, can be said for Telltale, right? Yeah. Telltale does a great job of storytelling in their games, okay? It's not focused on the platformer and all that kind of stuff. They're focused on telling a tale, and they do it well, right?
Yeah.
Okay, as far as shooting goes, whether you love them or hate them, I really don't care. Sledgehammer makes a great shooter. Every time. They make a great shooter experience. Okay, they just fucking do. Okay, are they the best storytellers on the planet? No. No. But they make a great shooter experience. If you like shooters, you're going to have a great shooting experience and a fun fucking multiplayer playing a Sledgehammer game, right? Like, there's just certain studios and certain developers and certain groups of people that are really good at certain aspects. So when you tag team them with people that make up for their spaces where they lack, like, that's where you get these superpower games. Like, look at Tomb Raider.
Exactly.
Okay? Well, you put Crystal D and fucking Square Enix in a room, and you get Rise of the Tomb Raider.
You do. So go out there, invest the money, and have the experience, and enjoy the experience, because it's definitely one worth enjoying.
I was hoping that you were going to get experience worked into that last sentence so that every sentence you said had experience.
No. I was like, stop it. In my mind, I was like, don't. Good job.
Yay. No, it's
completely worthwhile to invest your time into it.
Yeah, it sounds great. That sounds great. I don't know if I'll play it just because emotionally I feel like it's not a game that I should play.
And you get a dog and then something happens to your dog. And
yeah, like, see, this is where I'm starting to go.
But you never see it. It's all in text. It's all textual.
This is where I start to go,
beagle or a German shepherd and like a guy tries to jump you and he kicks your dog.
Okay, all right, spoiler-licious, I'm going to stop you there. So upcoming stuff for you guys. Just to be aware of as we get close to wrapping up this episode of the podcast. So we've got some really interesting reviews coming, both to the podcast as well as the website. I have a set of Astro A40 TRs for the PlayStation 4 that I'm currently playing with to test out. So there'll be a big ol' honkin' review on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com, as well as probably me talking about them in a podcast upcoming soon. I'm going to test them on everything, on the console as well as on my Mac and my PC, since it works with both. We're going to try it all over the place and see how it works out. So keep a lookout for that, and not just because we love Astro, although we do love Astro. I've not been disappointed by really any headset that I've gotten from them, so I'll be surprised if I'm disappointed in this one, but you'll just have to read the review and see. We've also got some videos coming. We are in the process of really kicking it into higher gear with our Let's Plays series called Fresh Plays that Panda and I create. So there will be some Uncharted stuff coming your way soon. So make sure, if you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel yet, that you do. YouTube.com/Electric Sisterhood. Make sure that you subscribe because we've got some fun videos coming for you guys. So make sure that you subscribe to us on YouTube, that you hit up our website, like I said, www.electricsisterhood.com. Our podcast will continue to rock and roll because we fucking love doing it. And you can get that podcast in iTunes on the desktop or on your iOS device through the podcast application by searching for Eshcast and subscribing. Or you can search for Electric Sisterhood. Either way, you'll find us in the iTunes store and you can subscribe. But if you're not living La Vida iOS, you can also get our podcast on Stitcher Radio. You can find us on Google Play, again, searching for the Eshcast, as well as VogNetwork.com, our website. Pretty much any place that you go on the web that serves up podcasts, you will more than likely find us on. So make sure that you subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a review wherever you're listening to the podcast. We love hearing what you think of our show. If you have anything that you want to share with us, then make sure that you connect with us on Facebook or on Twitter at facebook.com/landofesh or on Twitter at ESHnews. And just in time for PAX, we will be launching an Instagram account. So you will be able to see photos that we take from shows and events that we go to live, as well as just random game stuff that we do and some other fun things that we're creating on our Instagram account, which is at ESH News, because that's the way, I like it, So be sure to be on the lookout for new stuff dropping on our Instagram account real soon. If you haven't checked out any of the homies that make up the Land of Esh outside of just Electric Sisterhood, then I highly recommend that you do. Make sure that you check out b3crew.com. The podcast over there is No Borders, No Race. If you like indie stuff, music, movies, TV, theater, fucking anything that is just a little bit avant-garde, then make sure that you check out No Borders, No Race, hosted by our homeboy KBD. Absolutely love the show. Love the guests that he has on. DCD, Robert Workman, is a regular guest on the show, and it is just a fun time to be had by all. So make sure you check out b3crew.com. Also check out Smash Rook, held down by our homie Hamsterman2049, who's been with the crew forever and a day. Every Wednesday, check out his Twitch stream. He's streaming all different kinds of games live, retro games as well as current ones. You gotta check out the stream, so make sure you check it out. SmashRook.com. The Twitch is twitch.tv/Amsterdam2049. Gotta check it out. Make sure that you get on that shit. Also, the homies, the brothers from another mother over at nerdcrave.com, they've got the stuff that nerds crave. So if you like comics, if you like anime, if you like games, if you like us, you're gonna love Nerd Crave. So make sure that you check them out. Links to everybody that make up the Land of Esh can be found on our website. Check the footer. Make them your bookmarks, your favorites, the places that you start your day, the places that you end your day. I don't care. Just make sure that you're checking them all out. And last but certainly not least, our homie, Phil the Issues Guy, Phil's Recap and Review, issuesprogram.com. Check him out. If you like recap shows, trust me, you're going to fucking love everything that Phil does. I love his Game of Thrones recaps, and you will too. So make sure that you check him out. You can call in live, be part of the show. It is a great time, so make sure that you check out Phil's Recap and Review on the website, issuesprogram.com, as well as on YouTube. With that, it's the time of the show that I give an award. And this week's award for most prepared after coming back from hiatus goes to Pandalicious.
Oh my god, so all I'm going to say, to be short and sweet, is I have to thank Leonardo DiCaprio for one, finally winning his Oscar, and two, talking about the environment. It really made me reassess how I approach every day when it comes to my craft and my consciousness when I leave trash on the ground for the environment. So I'm going to stop doing one of those and do one of those more. I'm not sure how or how that will develop, but I'm hoping for the better. So once again, thank you, Leonardo DiCaprio, for making me believe in love again. And trust again.
Okay, I'm gonna stop you right there because I don't know. But what I do know is that I'm Ninja Sister
and I'm Pandalicious.
And until next week, guys.
You did it.